A century ago, East St. Louis was a tinderbox. Fraught with racial tension for months, it erupted in early July, leaving many blacks and whites dead. A significant property damage bill also. The centennial is being observed in many ways, including on stage. It's the subject of an original play by Gregory Carr. It is titled, appropriately, Tinderbox. He's instructor of speech and theater at Harris Stowe State University. He joins me in studio, along with Andrea Purnell, an actress who performs in Tinderbox. Thank you both so much for being with us. Great to have
you.
Thank you.
Gregory, let me come to you very quickly. Can you give us an overview of what was going on in 1917 to cause all of this?
Well, 1917, you have World War I going on. There is Southern immigration of blacks coming up from the South looking for jobs. And you have also an influx of European immigrants all in this kind of cauldron there in East St. Louis. And by looking at East St. Louis right now, you wouldn't think that this was one of the wealthiest cities in the United States. But in 1917, its nickname was West Pittsburgh because of all the industries there. So you have this kind of cauldron kind of bubbling over, and then suddenly politics make things kind of jump off. And then you also have a union strike that's going on, and suddenly somebody has to be the scapegoat. So they said, well, all the problems, we wouldn't have all these problems if we didn't have so many blacks coming from the South. They're the real problems. They're bringing the crime. And so it was a false narrative that started this entire thing.
And they were also taking jobs.
Of course, they were taking jobs.
Yeah.
The highest paying jobs.
And that's a tinderbox situation if ever there was one.
It truly was.
Andrea, you've been a lifelong resident of St. Louis. How much did you know about this incident of a century ago before you got involved with tinderbox?
You know, a lifelong resident, and even with lots of family actually in East St. Louis. But I'll tell you, and that's the beauty of the arts, most of the education I learned about the riots happened, you know, from doing research and learning more through this play. So I thank Greg, of course, and I think our community will be that much more enriched because of the story that's being told here, true history.
And that's the purpose, Gregory, of what you're doing, is to get the word out. It was a long time ago. Not everyone has a long memory when it comes to historical events.
This is very true, especially with St. Louis. We tend to forget the difficult times. Even now, we're looking at the third anniversary of the Ferguson unrest, and a lot of people have already begun to forget it. And I think you just mentioned in the announcements that the parents of Michael Brown settled, mm-hmm. but people are letting that story go by the wayside as well.
You have to wonder 100 years from now or 97 years from now mm-hmm. what they'll be saying about Ferguson. Tell us something about your play, The Structure. It's not a play as we would normally think of it, is it?
Well, I would say it's a play definitely with historical ramifications, but that was the most difficult aspect of it, because I didn't want our characters to be talking heads, to be spewing, you know, on December 1st, 1917, because that's also boring. But the other danger is if you take too much artistic license with a very, very complex situation like the East St. Louis in 1917, you also run the risk of disrespecting the memory of those who actually suffered through this. So that's what I struggle with, to get the historical accuracy as well as dramatic intent as well.
But it is a series of readings, however. Is that correct?
Right. It's a full play now. It is a full play.
So the first iterations were the readings then?
Yes. Yes. So this is actually a reading as well to commemorate the July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd when the riots really exploded at that particular time, and they're going to do a lot of commemoration for the people who lost their lives. So that's what this is in conjunction with.
Well, you have the East St. Louis 1917 Centennial Commission and Cultural Initiative is presenting a reading of Tinderbox.
Yes.
By yours truly, by Gregory Carr. Mm-hmm. That's July 1st at 2:30 at this SIUE Higher Education Campus in East St. Louis building. The D multipurpose room.
That's
correct.
That's
what you're talking about here.
Yes.
But that is going to be a series of readings.
Right. There'll be one reading, but it'll be a part of an entire weekend of actually things.
Okay. I've got you now.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea, how difficult or easy is it for an actress to take something like this and have to emote as, you know, at a lectern, if you will? Is it different than walking around on a stage?
I would say different, but with the beauty in having a playwright in Greg Carr that's also an actor is that he really dives into the nuances of the character. So as he mentioned, it's not at all about a talking head, even though we'll be sitting there as talking heads. I think the way that he has developed the play, you really get into their lives. And so while you see us sitting there talking, it is our hope that you can even close your eyes and go into the world of the characters, because they really take you there and just really, I think, open up their lives and who they were. And you really get a chance to, I think, understand them better.
You'll be interacting with other performers on stage during this performance?
Mildly, you know, as much as you can with a reading. I think gestures back and forth.
Yes.
But it really is. It's about the content,
and
for sure.
Who and what is your character?
My character, her name is Willie, and she is the wife of Simeon, the two main characters who we'll hear from in just a little while. And I think she brings, you know, as many women in that time, to be the woman and to be in a household where she really supports and understands who her husband is and his role. She also understands and realizes her role and the importance of having to go out, even if that means to get a job to help support her family. She's willing to do just that.
Greg, let's back up just a little bit and tell me about your cast of characters. Give me some sense of who they are. How different are they? Are there white characters in your book?
Yes, there are. There are white characters, and that was also a part of the historical accuracy, because the part of the cauldron or the tinderbox, if you will, is there is tension with whites would actually seek out Southern migrants to come up to work in the factories, which is where my character Simeon works. He actually works in the aluminum ore company, which was the site of the major riots and the union busting. So they actually brought them up, and many were resentful of them. And Simeon's wife, Willie, is a former teacher, and she initially comes there to act in the traditional role, to be the supporting wife, the stay-at-home wife. But when Simeon's company goes on strike, he's without a job. And so she interacts with a union boss by the name of Wilhelm, who's come by to try to get them to join. And he offers her the opportunity to work at the armor packing company, which they were just hiring black women at that time.
So it's built around the characters of Simeon and Willie.
That's true.
Is that what I'm getting?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All righty. Well, you know, you brought something along that we can listen and get some sense of the dialogue that's taking place. Set this up for me, Greg.
All right. So this is the climax of Act One, which I was very happy to get accomplished. And as I had spoken with you earlier, I was so happy back on May 7th when we read the first act. And we actually got a chance to read it at the Creative Exchange Lab. And just through the wonder of social media and Facebook, we had about 50 people show up. We only thought maybe 20 people showed up, but 50 people showed up. And some of the elders, I believe, is Edna and Reginald Petty, who I'm sure are listening right now with bated breath. And they said, son, you have to finish this. I said, no, I'll finish. They said, no, you must finish it quickly. The ancestors need to know that they're remembered. And so I took what they were saying, and I started thinking. I said, that's a lot of work to do that between May 7th and May 27th when we first read it. And after we read it on May 27th, it was such a powerful reaction. So at this particular scene, we're going to do is the climax of Act One, in which the bedlam is about to break loose. And the strike has happened, and Simeon is up in the air because he's a traditional man, and he's thinking, I won't be able to support my wife. But the wife is a little bit smarter than him. Willie is smarter, so she's brokered this deal to go work at the armor company so they can keep the money in the house. So there's a little bit of marital conflict in this.
That's often the case, the wife being smarter, isn't it?
Yes.
Are you a married man?
Yes, sir.
Then
99.9% of the time.
You're a smart man, Don.
Yeah, and I'm on live air, so I must say that.
Yeah, I'm going to have a good dinner tonight. I hope. Okay, so we're set. We're ready to go. Let's give a listen.
All right. And where you going?
I got me a job.
Didn't you hear me talking to Slow Jen? The German union bosses are on strike, and they ain't allowing nobody to cross the picket line.
I heard you, Simeon. That's why I'm going to work this morning.
Going to work where?
Armor and Company meatpacking plant, where they hiring colored girls for cleanup detail.
Woman, when was you going to tell me this?
Well, I figured you'd be upset about the strike and wondering how we're going to pay our bills, so I took this job.
And how long you been known about this? Because we sure ain't had no conversation about that right there. And where's this record player come from?
Simeon, we ain't got time to talk about all this. Now, we can talk about this when I get home.
Willie, we need to talk about this now.
Well, that ain't going to happen. Now, I ain't going to be late for my first day of work. And we don't know how long this strike's going to last. You're going to have to trust me, Simeon. I am your wife. Well, you've been pulling the load since we got here, and now it's my turn.
Mama ain't never had to work a day in her life when Daddy was alive. It ain't the way it's supposed to be.
Well, I ain't your mama. I'm me. Me, Simeon. And you need to be happy for me. Well, I'm not trying to usurp any of your ability to be the head of your house. You are a wonderful provider. But we in a situation that requires us to have some faith. And a part of that faith is I need you to trust me. Now, I need for you to believe in me. This wasn't something I had in mind when we got here. Well, we didn't know the union was going to go on to strike again like this. There's no way we could predict this, but we are here. And we got to live the here and now, not in what has been or even what will be in the future. You got to understand that, Simeon. Before we got married, I made my own money and I took care of myself. Now, I was going to let you establish once we moved here, and after a year, I was going to get a teaching job. It'd be nice if life fell into nice cookie-cutter pieces, but sometimes it don't go like that.
I hear you, Willie. I hear you.
I know you hear me, but I need you to understand. Now, this is temporary. All of this will pass, but we've got to do what we've got to do for now. That's all I'm saying. Now, we can finish talking about this when I get home, but I got to go. I love you.
And see.
Very, very nice. It's Andrea Purnell and Gregory Carr reading from Greg's play, Tinderbox, which is going to be playing July 1st at 2:30 at SIU Higher Education Campus in East St. Louis. We'll have information about that on our website. I'm with Willie on this one. Very
yes.
Nice. It's a very nice reading. And
thank you.
You know, you really catch the mood, I think, of that particular moment. Greg, what about your research for this? I mean, obviously, you have to dig back and peel that onion 100 years.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me about that and how you went about it.
Well, Don, the first time I actually heard about the East St. Louis riots, and I'm even learning now that even the name riots is the wrong nomenclature for it. Dr. Charles Lumpkins, who was here about a month ago, he came to Harris Stowe about 2008 and gave a lecture, and everyone in the audience was just riveted by him. And I actually got him to sign my book. It was just a part of his dissertation. And I asked him I bought a book. I said, please sign my book. And I said, I'm working on a play. This is 2008. Never had gotten it to paper. I said, I'm working on a play. And he actually wrote in my book. He says, I hope that you write this play very soon. Mm-hmm. And so I showed him the book when he was here back in May. I said, your research is the reason why this play exists. Because before Dr. Lumpkin's work, I would say the premier research about it was Elliot Rudwick, East St. Louis riots, July 2nd, 1917, and it was very clinical from a very sociological point of view. Whereas I think Dr. Lumpkins does that research, but he personalizes it and he puts it in a cultural context. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe Dr. Rudwick would say there was a riot. There were several whites who fought blacks in front of a barbershop going down Broadway. Whereas Dr. Lumpkins would say at Leroy's Barbershop at the corner 4th and Broadway, three black men fought with five white men, and it was a huge – so he was more specific and maybe culturally intent, which helped. And that's why I said I want to make sure we got the history right too.
Were Simeon and Willie real people?
I would say they're composites. Yeah. I think they represented those who were coming up from the South for a better opportunity, and they were part of that great migration. And the other part of the Great Migration people don't really like to talk about is, like, why did blacks come up from the South? Many times they were being terrorized in the South by the Ku Klux Klan, or they were being mistreated through Jim Crow, or they weren't getting the jobs that they deserved. So this was a great opportunity for them to make more money and have a better life.
You say that you wouldn't call it a race riot. What would you call it?
A pogrom. And I really believe that based on what Dr. Lumpkin's research, and he compared it to the Holocaust in Nazi Germany and the pogrom in Tsarist Russia, because it was engineered specifically by political motivation. And then it was acted out, of course, by the citizens. But all of the laws and ordinances had been put in place where there was nothing but tension. And so the people acted out these laws in a very bizarre way.
Andrea, are you aware of the kind of brutality that took place back then in this particular incident, the pogrom, as it's being called?
No, to be honest with you, I was not. I've had the pleasure of doing more research, as I mentioned, because of this. But another thing I'll say is not only is this important because it's important that we know our history, I think, you know, we're both living in this city, active members, and we see the violence. You know, we see the crime. We see what's happening. I think knowing the history, knowing from whence we've come, especially with the community of color, is imperative. I think this will instill a lot of more value in our community. And I know that Greg works with young people, and it is our hope that this will be presented to as many youth as possible. And I think that there is power in that. I truly do. So, you know, Greg will be a name that hopefully we'll be talking about in 100 years, just as a person who is crystallizing our history in such a way that I'm just happy to be a part of the journey, for sure.
I'm glad you brought up young people, because I wanted to get to that and ask you as a performer, and then Greg, you as the author, if you feel a special responsibility in this regard to reach young people, particularly in today's environment. Do you have that feeling of your own personal responsibility to make that connection?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And I think finding out-of-the-box ways, of course, theater being one of them, to do it is crucial. Non-traditional ways. And again, I think this is a format that can powerfully do that. I'm sure, Greg, you can speak to it as well.
Definitely. One of the things that we learned during the first, and I thought it was very interesting, I also want to mention a very instrumental person, Dr. Carla Scott from St. Louis University. She was very instrumental in putting this together and joining both sides of the river on this. And I didn't realize that when we held the first conference, it was a 2-day conference we held, that Dr. Lumpkins was presenting his information, as well as Dr. Thising and some others. They actually the commemoration happened May 26th through 28th. That was the first round of the like a precursor to the riots at that particular time. And everything fit in really well. And I would say the inspirational voice is Father Brown. Father Brown, who is an East St. Louis resident, who's also, I think, the first and only black priest from East St. Louis, just really gave this prayer that opened up the conference, and he closed it out. And I love what he says. He says, "I believe the ancestors are smiling now, and that great cloud of witnesses are now being recognized and being acknowledged, because many people died in horrific ways." And the thing that I was really impressed about during that conference, they had some of the young people from East St. Louis 189 write essays and Kwansabas, and they were able to read it aloud there at this particular conference. Mm-hmm. And some of them also did some brief documentaries in which they actually read from the accounts of the testimonials of people who suffered through it, who actually lived through it. And it was very powerful to hear the young people read this material.
So you've gotten a sense already from as to how young people are reacting to this.
Yes.
And one of the things that I wonder about is there's a lot of anger out there today. I mean, there have been these police shootings. There have been recent verdicts that have people just very, very much upset. I'm just wondering if reading about the treatment of African Americans 100 years ago by whites in East St. Louis is just going to make more anger, create greater anger by people, young people who would watch your play, for instance.
I think it would bring greater understanding, because if you remember, the first time we were on air was 3 years ago talking about Mike Brown. I think this brings it full circle, because if you go back and look at Ferguson and all the different places, roughly from about 1906, where Atlanta, they had a riot there, and then 1908 in Springfield, Illinois, 1917 in East St. Louis, and then they have what's called 1919, which was the Red Summer, in which there were multiple riots in major cities. So we see a pattern. So if the young people know that there's a pattern and they understand, maybe they can understand what they're looking at. So, you know, I'm kind of from the country a little bit because my folks are from Kentucky, and they taught us how to tell the difference between snakes. A snake with a round head, yeah, it'll bite you, but it won't kill you. But that snake with a pointed head, it'll kill you. It's a viper. So I think what our young people are discovering, now we know what we're looking at, because they think these things are happening out of the air. They're wondering, where has this happened? And then when they see this kind of cyclical pattern, they go, oh, this has happened before. So I think it will bring more understanding as opposed to anger.
Well, you know, I would hope so. But think about it. You were talking about 1917. I mean, mm-hmm. Brown versus Board of Education in the 50s, mm-hmm. Civil rights movement in the 60s. And you have Michael Brown in 2014. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a cyclical thing, but how much is really improved?
Not a great deal, because we're still not really having those conversations. We're talking at each other, not to each other. Mm-hmm. So theater, like Andrea said, gives us an opportunity, because what we do after the performances, we allow the audience to respond. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great time for people to talk and to express themselves. And when we read it on May 7th, there was silence. And even on May 27th, when we finished, so not to give a spoiler alert, but at the end of the play, I just felt it was very important to include Marcus Garvey, the great civil rights leader. This was his entry into the world stage, because he did this impassioned speech about what he saw in East St. Louis, and that gave him an international platform. So I actually have the speech, an excerpt of the speech at the end as the characters finished speaking. And after we finished that speech, when we read it on the 27th, there was silence for about 30 seconds, and people stood up and just clapped, and they clapped for a minute, and many of the elders were very much in tears, and it was a very emotional moment, and so I think we need those sorts of moments.
What most people probably don't realize is the fact there were demonstrations and protest against this all over the country. There are some famous pictures in New York City of massive marches of people.
The silent march.
It
was a silent march.
Protesting what had happened. Mm-hmm. Andrea, have you had a chance after the previous two readings to talk to anybody about it and get reaction?
Not yet. Not yet, Don, but I do look forward to it. Again, having grandparents, my mother herself went to East St. Louis High. The community, which is such a beautiful community of East St. Louis, is a very warm one. So I look forward to opportunities after performances to engage with the community, hear their feedback, find out what they're thinking, how this has impacted them. And you're right, unfortunately, cyclical pattern cycles, this is definitely something that we've seen before. But perhaps one thing that can be gleaned from this is we're learning strategy. So yes, 100 years ago, they were doing the same sorts of protest, but we can look back and say, what did they do? What did they do well? You know, and what can be changed? And so that is at least some light of hope, you know, at the end of the tunnel, because unfortunately, you know, we're very much in a position that we've been before.
You got to have hope.
Yeah, that's true.
Greg Carr, where does Tinderbox go from here?
Well, Tinderbox, after this next reading, we're looking at ways to get it to the stage. I've talked to Dr. Carla Scott. Perhaps we may do a production at St. Louis University. And I also know Ron Himes, and Ron Himes will probably be listening. So, we'll put out there Ron Himes. You know, if you're listening, we got a great play. Mm-hmm. Be a great play for the Black rep. I really have aspirations. And I think ultimately, because it's such a visual piece, I do want to make it into a screenplay, because it needs to be seen on a larger scale as well.
Well, big plans for it.
And
we don't want it to stop just because the anniversary year comes and goes.
Exactly.
Once again, this is going to be happening on July 1st at SIU's Higher Education Campus in East St. Louis, Building D. We have all of the information about that on our website. Greg Carr and Andrea Purnell, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Don.
Good
Appreciate
luck.
You.
Break a leg, as they say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.